You're listening to the Real Church Podcast. Real Church is located in Chicago, Illinois. For more information, please visit realchicago.com.
Good morning to everybody who's watching online or who's here in the basement. If you're listening on the podcast later on, however you've come across this teaching, I really want to encourage you for the next 35 to 45 minutes to really focus on being present. And even in this next 45 minutes, notice all the times when you lose being present. Now, I'm not going to waste your time with all of the different conflicting studies that all have spent time figuring out how long we can focus, but most of them say you've already been distracted and you've already lost focus, even when I've started in this introduction. And you're starting to think about something else, that you lose presence and you're moving around and you're thinking about all these things. I think about Christmas, and I think about how America has made Christmas so materialistic, so consumeristic. I remember years ago when I was in California, and I remember being at what people would describe as a mall. I don't know if you guys know what a mall is. It used to be this place where people would go and fight for parking spaces so they could go inside to get Mrs. Fields cookies. And then they would purchase other random specialized gifts and things like that. But I remember one Christmas where I observed a fistfight brawl over a parking space. I was blown away that somebody would wait inside of the parking lot and they would have their directional on, their blinker on, and they would be signaling that space, that space, that space, that space, that's the one I want, that's the one I want, that's the one I want, that's the one I want. And then some other car would swoop in and take it and go, oh, I didn't know that that's the one that you wanted. I know you've never experienced that. I know many of you in this church have been that person who's swooped the parking space and who didn't look. In Chicago, there's a thing with drivers that if I didn't look at you, I didn't really offend you, that I can pull in front of you really quickly, but as long as I don't make eye contact, it didn't happen. It's no different than the three-year-old holding on to something they're not supposed to be touching, and you say, stop touching that, and they hold it way away from their body, thinking, now you can't see it. It's not there. You can't see it. What I want you to understand is we have to deal with some really honest stuff at the very beginning of this teaching. We have to deal with our pride. We have to deal with how we lie to ourselves. I so appreciate that Chelsea has brought into our church that when you are multitasking, you are multi-distracting. That's what you're doing. You are multi-distracting yourself. I cannot tell you how frustrated I get when I want to spend precious time with my wife and I go to a movie theater and I spend $15 on each seat and I spend another, and I'm lying, but crack up with me for a second, $50 on popcorn and soda to sit in a movie theater to have the movie start and somebody's cell phone ring in the middle of the movie. And more painful, it's one of the people in my party that I purchased their tickets. And it was at Star Wars. And it was to my left. Like, what I want you to understand is now I'm distracted. Here I've paid all this money. I've invested all this time, this effort to get this ticket, to be in this place, to experience this moment. And now I'm looking on the ground, down in between the seats, in the aisles, praying to God it's not my phone, but so indignant that it's somebody else's, but not enjoying the movie. Are you somebody who has a tiny bladder? Have you been in a movie and your bladder tells you you're going to miss the next 10 minutes? You're not going to get to be present in this theater. You're going to be present somewhere else. That's what our brains do to us. Our brains constantly hijack where we are and take us to other places. Now, some of us, we love having our brains hijacked. We don't want to be here. We love living in fantasy. We love living in the past. We love living in the future. We struggle living in the present. I love listening to people when they opine about how great the 1950s were. If we could just go back to a time in America where racism was cool in the South, where separate but equal was totally okay, where alcoholism, abuse, and domestic violence were massively on the rise because we had warriors who returned home from World War II with PTSD and we didn't know how to deal with it. Let's go back to that time. No! But we want to forget all that pain. We want to think about the diners. We want to think about skinny Elvis Presley. We want to think about the wonderful, some of you guys are laughing. You're like, oh my gosh, he totally just said that. Yes, there's a big difference between big Elvis and little Elvis. Okay, let's just be honest. Okay, there's no felt paintings or whatever pictures of bigger Elvis, okay? But what I want you guys to think about is notice that you're trying to constantly escape. You're trying to leave where you are. Why? Here's why. You were never designed to be here on earth. You were designed to be with God in paradise, and your flesh and your soul wants to escape. Amen. The problem is we're trying to escape in the wrong ways. And what I want to teach you as one of your spiritual leaders is to teach you how to escape correctly. But what I want to tell you is in order to escape correctly, you first have to be present. You need to be here. This week, I was watching the Lord of the Rings trilogy with my family. And we were watching the Fellowship of the Rings. And there's a conversation between Frodo and Gandalf. At this point in time, it's Gandalf the Grey. I apologize if I'm ruining this for you. It's been 20 years. But what I want to share with you is there's an amazing quote. And here's the quote that Gandalf says that J.R. Tolkien wrote for him. Frodo says, I wish it need not have happened in my time. So do I, said Gandalf. And so do all who live in such times. And all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us. Let me call the ushers forward. Let's just close in prayer and let's just repent. Because Gandalf has owned us. Are you frustrated that it's 2020, that we're in the time of COVID? Are you angry that you're online doing school? Are you frustrated that you're doing a job and you're homeschooling? Are you frustrated that you got let go? Are you frustrated that your business is more? Are you frustrated? What are you frustrated about? Because we're in a time that's difficult. And we can use Gandalf's amazing, amazing quote. Everybody's not happy where they're at. But what you and I have to do is decide what we will do with the time given to us. What will you decide to do with the present? What will you decide to do with your problems? What will you try to do and decide with your blessings? What will you decide to do with the habits, the hurts, the hang-ups, the pains, the joys, the excitement, the victories, the celebrations, the mourning, the pain? Ecclesiastes, there's a time for everything. Will you be honest with the time? Will you give honor to it? Will you give dignity to the time? And will you reflect the correct emotion and worship response to the time? How do we do that? Well, it's difficult. Let me not lie. It's difficult because we have been trained to be distracted like you cannot believe. We have things that distract us completely. I was in another movie, sitting in another movie, watching another movie, totally intense on what's going on. And a precious device that I had put on my wrist decided to let me know it was time to stand. What's funny is I looked around the theater, because I like to be about 3/4 back, and I looked at all of these people telling their digital assistant to shut up. Like I literally watched, because it's really funny, because it's I don't know what time it is in the hour that it tells everybody to stand, but you can find out who has Apple products. And you just see in the room, everybody's like, but my problem was, I went like this, and there's this big blue thing looking at me like, stand! And I was distracted from the movie. Does your cell phone distract you? The answer is yes. Don't lie to me. Some of you guys have already looked at it just to check to make sure it's still there. Does email distract you? Heck yeah. Some of you guys, stop checking your email after 5 p.m. Wait till 6 a.m. because that's going to distract you the rest of the night, and your brain is going to be running, and you're going to wonder why you can't fall asleep. Do text messages distract you? Yes. Does the Great Bake Off distract you? The answer's yes. And I even found out that Tottenham, a club in England, is actually fighting each other, and they're doing the Great Bake Off with each other, and they're making the people inside of the hotel that they have to stay in quarantine judge them as athletes on how well they're doing. And they're voting each other off. Like, is it distracting? Yes. We're all trying to distract. We're trying to numb. We're trying to check out. Wow, if it's not the 1960s. The amount of alcohol that has been purchased in America over the last year is insane. The amount of firearms that has been purchased in the last year is insane. The amount of chocolate that has been purchased in the last year is insane. The amount of toilet paper is insane. But it's apparently if you're eating all that chocolate, then you got other issues. Look, see how I just distracted you? One of the things that I know as a pastor and as a teacher is I've studied for a long time that I try every 15 to 25 seconds to shift thoughts and conversations because I know you got distracted and I know you got lost and I try to bring you back. And I also repeat myself several times while I'm teaching. Like, Pastor, you already said that. I know 90% of the people who didn't hear it the first time missed it the second time. I'm hoping they'll get it the third. If you're an educator, you know what I'm talking about. So here we are. I know that as a teacher, 60% of what I'm going to teach today, you won't remember, which is why we have podcasts, which is why we have small groups. It's so that you can go back and catch all the stuff you missed. But we're arrogant. We say, I got it. I heard it all. You're a liar. You heard 60% of it, and you're hoping the 60% you heard is the part you needed. That's what you want. Some of you guys, you don't write anything down. You live your life by making everybody else be your Google Assistant, your Alexa, and your calendar. You go to everybody else and ask them, oh, what are we doing today? What's the plan? What did we decide? You're not paying attention. What do I mean by paying attention? Ah, let's get into that. So there's a story inside of the Bible, which is the Christmas story. You're thinking, how in the world are you going to bring Christmas into us paying attention? Well, let me help you out. When Jesus Christ, the Savior of all the earth, was born and he came into this world, many people didn't see it. They absolutely missed it. They weren't aware of his presence, like we just sang. And so let's talk about a story, which is the wise men, about how God's presence came into earth and how the wise men dealt with his presence and another character, Herod, how he dealt with the presence and another character, Mary, how she dealt with the presence. And what's really interesting is I'm really not going to talk about how Jesus dealt with the presence because he's always been present. Amen. He will always be present. He's always with us. He will never leave us. He will never forsake us. He's always been and he always will be. So I don't have to argue what he's doing. He is. Let's read the story together in Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. Let me read the first verse and then set up some context. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. We have characters already set up inside of the story. We have Bethlehem, which is a character. It's a looked down town. It's one of those towns that everybody else thought they were better than. So New York, Chicago, Houston, Dallas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle would look down on this place as a place that didn't even have a stoplight. Maybe it had a stop sign. Maybe it had a post office. But we're talking a low of the low town. We're not talking about a great prestigious town. We're not talking about a town that everybody's thinking, man, I gotta visit there. No, it was a town that you were aware of, but it wasn't definitely a destination. It wasn't something that you would brag of where you were from. It was also in the area that wasn't bragged about, in Judea, in the north side, not some of the area that you'd want to be. It was about 2 hours walk from Jerusalem. It wasn't Jerusalem. It was a suburb of Jerusalem that when they were around and they're like, hey, where are you from? Hey, I'm from Jerusalem. Oh, I'm from Jerusalem too. Where are you from? Oh, well, 2 hours north of Jerusalem in Bethlehem. Oh, well, you're not from Jerusalem. By the way, I became that person when I was traveling and someone said they were from Chicago. And I'm like, oh, you're from Chicago. Where are you from? And they're like, Schaumburg. And I'm like, you're not in Chicago. I'm arrogant now. The next character, Herod. Who's Herod? Herod the Great. Herod the Brutal. Herod the Destructive. Herod the Architect. Herod the Builder. Herod the one who went into the temple and redesigned it and made it greater in human terms. Sit there and think about this for a second. The great temple that's destroyed in 70 AD was added to by a guy who wasn't honoring God and put more gaudy stuff onto it, and not like godly stuff, gaudy stuff on it, and made it great for him, not for God. Have you been making the temple great for him and not for God, the temple? Herod, who had Caesar speak of him this way, better to be a pig in Herod's house than a son. Caesar from Rome, Caesar, who said, hey, we should all count how many people are in our nation. Caesar, who caused them to move around and go everywhere. Caesar said about Herod, better to be a pig than a son. Why? Because at least Herod, in some respects, honored the Jewish traditions of not touching pigs and eating them, but he killed his sons, murdered them, and wiped them out because he was afraid that they wanted to take his power. He had his first wife killed as well. On his deathbed, he wrote that he wanted all of his elders and leaders wiped out and killed as well. This dude was brutal. And then we have wise men coming from the east, from Jerusalem, most likely from Babylon. Go into the Daniel chapters, and we learn in the book of Daniel about Daniel dealing with the Chaldeans, or the Chaldeans, however you want to say those, and the astrologers. These are people who watched the stars in the east and studied what was going on in the world. And we have them moving and traveling probably 2 to 3 months' journey, 500 miles they travel to come see Jesus. So let me help you out in the biblical story. Jesus isn't born that night, and all of a sudden, the wise men show up. Jesus is born, and the wise men see what's going on, and the wise men respond, and the wise men seek to be present. Ah. Verse 2. They said, where is he who is born the King of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, Herod, who doesn't want anybody to take his authority, Herod, who makes sure that nobody has an opportunity to take his seat on the throne, was troubled. And so was all of Jerusalem. Do you know why all of Jerusalem was troubled? They weren't afraid of Jesus. They were afraid of what Herod was going to do. By the way, Herod's great plan, later on we find out, is to kill all the children in Bethlehem and Judea who were 3 years old and younger, to make sure that he wouldn't lose his position. Let me help you out with politicians. Politicians always care about their house and their family. They will lie to you and say they care about you. They don't care about you. They care about getting elected. They care about the next stage, the next step. They care about getting more power and making sure they don't give away any of their power. Welcome to politics. You're like, well, Pastor Nathan, that's only because of the last 4 years, because of the person that we have, the great Herod, who's in the White House now. Oh, you of little study of history. That has been every single person in power. They don't like letting it go. They don't like letting go of the fame. They don't like letting go of the attention. Verse 3, when Herod heard this, he was troubled with all Jerusalem. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where Christ was to be born. This guy who supposedly was following Judaism. This guy who supposedly was part of the chief priest's family, who was married into Jerusalem. the rightful rulers and the people who are supposed to be leading the religious peace of Jerusalem should have known where he was to be born, what was to be going on. And let me help you out. Christians, we're the same way. We say we follow Christ, we claim we follow God, but we don't know what God wants us to do. We spend more time watching The Crown. We spend more time watching English Premier League soccer. We spend more time finding the best whiskey that you can find in a barrel. Okay? We spend more time, whatever you're into and you're doing, that you're spending all of your energy and your time in. You're learning about what you're interested in. And you are focused on what you're focused on. You can tell what Herod was focused on. Definitely not on Christ. He told them, these were the scribes that got together. They said, in Bethlehem of Judea, for it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means among the ruler, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Man, this made Herod feel great. Herod was not happy. Verse 7. Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly. Ooh, secretly. And he ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. In other words, he didn't even notice the star. He wasn't even paying attention. It wasn't on his radar at all. Nor was it on any of his people around him's radar. He said, hey, go to Bethlehem and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I may too come and worship him. Lies. Lies. I have spent tons of time with people who come to me and say, Pastor, oh, I want to be close to God. Pastor, I want to do these things, but it's inconvenient. Can you make it easier for me? Can you go do the work for me and I'll live on your spiritual coattails? Pastor, can I just be around you in your presence because you're so godly? And because you're godly, God will love me because I'm God adjacent. No. Man, you know what Herod should have done? Herod should have said, I'm leading, let's go. But that's not his heart. Herod said, I have other important things to do here in Jerusalem rather than going and worshiping the king. Hasn't that been you and me? Haven't you found yourself so distracted by things that you thought were so much more important than going and worshiping the king? Well, Pastor, man, Sundays are exhausting. We've got a lot going on. Monday through Friday, we had so many things that we did. We're just exhausted on the weekends. We got nothing. Yeah, when God says, bring me your first fruits, bring me your energy, bring me your joy, bring me your love, your firsts, we bring our lasts. We bring our leftovers to God. One of the biggest shifts for me in my brain was to see that Sunday is the first day of the week. Saturday is the last day of the week. To treat Sunday as the first day. I'm going to give my first and my best to God on Sunday. That's just something that I've tried to do inside of my life. I've even changed my calendars inside of my Google calendar that Sunday is the first day. It's not Monday. What do you need to do to start helping you to figure out you've got to put God first so that you can actually get in his presence at your best energy? After listening to the king, they went their way, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, the mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. Notice they didn't arrive, see the star on the house, celebrate, high five, and go home. They went into the house. Touch the white fence. Complete the task. You can do this. Focus, focus. Focus. Why did you travel 2 months? Why did you travel 500 miles? Did you travel 500 miles to see a star over a house, or did you travel 500 miles to see the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords? And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and they worshiped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They had carried these gifts to give to the king. You and I right now are carrying gifts to give to the king. We don't know what day he's going to ask for it. But your job is to carry the gift. Yes, it's heavy. Yes, it's cumbersome. Yes, it's difficult. Yes, it gets in the way. No, you don't know when you're going to use it. But when it's time, you need to present yourself to the king and give your gift. We see this from the wise men. Verse 12, and being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. They stayed for a while. They spent the night in Bethlehem. They were there. They were committed. And God said, hey, now it's time for you to return. You've done your job, and this will be the direction you're going to go. Now, let me help you guys out. They had drawn up a plan. They had written up how they were going to go. They were going to go over here, and they were going to come back. They knew. And God said, I know you said you were going to do this. You're now going to do this. It's going to be different. So how can we pay attention like the wise men? How can we not be Herod? How can we not be some of Herod's group and team who should have known things, but be more aware? How can we be more focused? How can we pay attention this Christmas? Well, we first of all got to admit that there's way too much information out there and we're overloaded. So the first thing that you and I have to do in order to pay attention is we have to edit, we have to trim, we have to delete, we have to create margin and space. We are overloaded with information right now. We're overloaded with how many deaths are with COVID. We're overloaded with how many people are infected. We're overloaded with masks. We're overloaded with politics. We're overloaded with what you should buy for Christmas and every single entity on the face of the earth who offers pickup or delivery. Everybody is in your face trying to sell and market because everybody's trying to survive. You and I are overloaded with information. Get in the car and drive. We are saturated and overloaded with information of billboards and signs and words and lights and colors. We are overloaded. When you get in your car, most likely you have your radio on. You have a dashboard that gives you tons of information and tons of signals. You have sounds that are going on. Your brain is processing massive amounts of information. When you come home, Alexa says, welcome. Let me give you 17 things that have happened in the information that's going on. You go, you sit down, you turn on a TV, the TV comes on, and it flashes images at you super fast. You watch a show that gives you emotions and feelings of people who are fake and are not real, and it's not truth. It's made up fantasy. You're overloaded with somebody who comes in and wants to tell you about their day. And you don't have any margin to hear about their day. You're overloaded because your mother and your father may be sick. You're overloaded because your kids have this going on and this going on, and your brother has this going on, and your friend has this going on, and your neighbor has this going on, and emotionally you are so aware you're raw. You're overloaded. You see, too much data overwhelms us and our brain shuts down. Have you had that happen? Have you had your brain shut down? I have. Have you ever noticed that you've been driving in a car and you've arrived somewhere and you have no idea how you got there and you can't give any information of the last 5 minutes of driving? Has that occurred to you? That's happened to me. Have you been reading a book and you got to the bottom of the page and you have no idea what you read? Mm-hmm. Have you been in a sermon and there's a guy wearing a green flannel? He's been teaching for a while and you still don't know what Bible verse he's teaching from? It's Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. Have you been in a meeting and all of a sudden it's like everybody's Charlie Brown characters? Wah, 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 wah. And you're like, I agree. Oh, we don't agree? I disagree. Like you don't know what's going on. Has your spouse come to you and said, hey, on Friday, we're going to, and you're like, yeah, great. It's happened to all of us. Why? Because when we're under stress and when we're in boredom, our brain runs around trying to create connections and trying to create chemical processes that keep us going and functioning. You said, wait a minute, so when I'm stressed and I'm bored, I have these problems? Yes, happens in both instances. So how do we get our body and our mind in the same place? In other words, have you ever physically been present and your brain's not there? Your body's there, but your brain's not? I have. This week, I literally tried to pay attention to all the times that I wasn't paying attention. Do you know how exhausting that is? I remember being in conversations with people this week, whether on the phone or whether on Zoom or whether face-to-face, and I was thinking about something that I needed to do in 3 hours or something that I needed to do in a day or two. And so my body was physically present on the Zoom call. Hilarious. Body physically present on the Zoom call. But my brain wasn't. So how do we bring it back in? I'm just trying to present to you that I know your pride's like, no, I'm paying attention. I just want you to get humble. I just want you to get, nah, not paying attention. Dang it. You probably shouldn't repeat it because I'm not going to write it down. I'm overwhelmed right now. It's too much information. Too much information. So let me help you guys out. And I recognize what I'm going to teach you, 5 things I'm going to teach you. You're probably going to remember one. Maybe. You might be able to reference one. You may not be able to remember it. So this is probably something because of how tired you and I are. You need to go back and listen to the podcast again. You need to go back on. Maybe you're like, you're not a podcast person. Come back on Facebook Live and watch it again. But don't look at what all your friends are doing for Christmas and how they're dressing their dogs and their animals. Like, don't. Focus on what you've got to focus on. Here are 5 ways to be present. Number one, train your attention. Number one, train your attention. Let me help you out. You have been training your attention. You have been training yourself for bad habits and for good habits, and you have to train your attention. For the last 7 months, we have been training ourselves. This is going to end. I'm just going to get over this. This is just going to be temporary, and I can just make some decisions, and then I'll be able to end these new habits, and I'll be able to get back to the good habits that I had. We're past that. We are now 9 months into this, and everybody who learns about new habits and new forms, we've changed our habits. Here's the problem. Once you change your habits and you create a new habit, it is harder to end that habit than to start a new habit. So what we try to do is just create a new habit. Just ignore the old habit and create a new habit. No. You have to kill the old habit and then create a new habit. That's difficult. Pastor, I don't have time for that. Yes, you do. None of us are going anywhere. You have plenty of time. You don't want to. You're just like Herod, who doesn't want to read the Bible and know when the king is coming, and you want to summon other people and have them do the work for you. It's because we're lazy. Alexa, teach me about God. Point number 2. That'd be so funny if some of you guys, your Alexas all went off and she's answering now. Sorry. But that was a distracting point for it to happen so that you could jump back in for point number 2. Point number 2, set aside time. Set aside time. Point number 1, train your attention. How do you train your attention? Set aside time. You are going to have to deal with the past. You are going to have to live in the present. And you are going to have to plan for the future. So you're going to have to do those 3 things. But most of you just want to kind of do it organically. Just feel it when it is. How's organically working for you? Organically is rotting. Organically is not getting things done. Organically is rushing around like there's a fire and needing everybody else to change their plans because you haven't planned. Now let me help you out what I mean by these things. Set aside time to look in the rearview mirror, like Chelsea said. She taught so well last year that if you spend all your time looking in the rearview mirror, you're going to crash because you're not looking where you're supposed to be going. Your attention and focus is not in the right place. But if you completely ignore your past, you will not understand your present choices and your present emotions and the present things that are happening to you. So yeah, you do need to look in the rearview mirror. You do need to be able to do those things. But what I like about the rearview mirror analogy is you glance up. You don't turn around. And I appreciate what Chelsea taught us. When we live our lives like this, we get in trouble. So much regret, so much hurt, so much pain. But there's another group who only live in the future. They're not going to look at anything back there. There is a swath of people who've been destroyed by your poor choices, who have been insulted and hurt and damaged by you. This week I was talking to somebody and we were brought up VHS tapes. Some of you guys don't know what VHS tapes are. They're really cool. There was this thing where you could go to a video store and it was harder to become a member at a video store than it was to get a credit card. But you had to get, so my buddy was telling me, we were talking about how, you know, you have to turn your videos in on time or you get late fees. And the problem was late fees could be like $100 at the end of the month if you weren't careful. But he was going, no, it was really simple. All I would do is if I got a late fee, I just go to another rental store and sign up for a new one. That's the type of person who's not dealing with their past. They're just creating more and more and more and more problems. You just have late fees at multiple places. So you got to set aside time to review your past. Now, let me help you guys out. This may be something you should do each and every day. Now, each of you is individual. You guys are who you are. Let me share with you what I do and what I've learned. That doesn't mean that you do what I do. It just means that you go, oh, okay. How would I adapt that to my personality? At the end of the night, when I go to bed and everything else is quiet, I stop and I review the day. I just ask the King. I don't review the day through my filter and through my lens. I ask God, hey, God, did I miss you today? Did I do something that dishonored you today? Did I do something that honored you today? Did I do something that made you smile? God, was I faithful and obedient to who you made me to be? God, did I walk in the steps that you had me walk in today? And why do I ask those review questions? Because I've learned that if I just do today what I'm supposed to do, I'm going to be exactly where I'm supposed to be tomorrow. And then tomorrow, if I just do what I'm supposed to do tomorrow, I will be exactly where I'm supposed to be the following day. The problem is we've put somewhere in the world, we've put these connections that if there's just not pleasure and happiness, we've done something wrong. Go back to Gandalf and Frodo's conversation. Stuff happens. It matters how you respond to it. It matters what you do with it. And so you got to look at it. Okay, so I review my day. And if there's something that I've got to repent for or I've got to talk to God about, I talk to God about. If I've got to apologize to somebody that I've hurt or I've injured, I go and apologize to them. They don't like it. They would much rather me just ignore it and leave it alone and not deal with it and not bring it up and not talk about it, because it's so much better if you just ignore the past and let it grow and destroy you later on. No. Scripture says, as far as it is from you, be at peace with everybody. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Fix things today as best you can. Be present. Live. Be here. Be right now. Be in this moment. December 13th, 2020, isn't going to happen again. This is a beautiful moment, and this is a beautiful time. Enjoy it. Enjoy it to its fullness, in its boredom, in its excitement, in its sadness, in its celebration, in its just blah, in its overcast or sunny, in its rain or its snow, in its warm, its cold, its hot, whatever, wherever you are at. This is the day the Lord has made. Amen. Rejoice and be glad in it. I was reminded this week that God inhabits the praises of his people. He doesn't inhabit the criticism and the hate from their mouths. I know somebody else who inhabits those. And then there's the future. Yes, plan and dream. Now, let me be very careful and let me be very clear. Some of you guys are already going to check out and I've got to bring you back on this point. Pastor said it's totally okay for me to worry about tomorrow. That is not what I said. Pastor, when am I going to get the COVID vaccine? That's not what I said. Plan. Planning is to putting things in pencil and taking it and committing your plans to the Lord. Most of us try to get the Lord to commit to our plans. We write up our plans and say, Lord, bless it. So we try to be God. plan with God in mind. King, what would you have me do? Read James. Perhaps, maybe we'll go do this and we'll sell this, or we'll go to such and such a place. If the Lord wills, we'll go do these things. It's okay for you to plan. You need to have some sort of a plan for tomorrow. But at the same time, don't create these hardcore concrete things that are written, chiseled in stone, not even written in ink, where you've chiseled in stone what tomorrow will be. Jesus talked so much about tomorrow, and every single time he talked about tomorrow, he said, be present today. He says, tomorrow has enough worries of its own. How about you deal with today's worries? So some of you guys are great planners, but you're planning on catastrophe. You're creating more events and problems and difficulties. By the way, 99% of them aren't going to happen. And you've been doing this for 20 years. That means you have a 99% failure rate of predicting the future. Which means you need to start telling yourself, when you start predicting what's going to happen tomorrow, if you have a 99% failure rate, you need to tell yourself, there's a 99% chance you're wrong. So I'm not going to believe myself. But that person who loves to worry goes, but there's a 1% chance. Yeah, but you still haven't hit it. Plan, but don't worry. Plan, but don't obsess. Plan that the Lord is on the throne and that the tomb is empty and that God Almighty is in charge and he loves you and he's got a plan for you. Plan that direction. But don't spend time planning about all the terrible things that could happen. That's how the world manipulates you, and they use fear to control you. Whoa. So set aside time. Set aside specific times to do these things. Maybe you plan your week on Sunday night. What are the things we need to do? I was appreciative a couple years ago. Someone in our church came to me and they were talking about how their husband and wife sat down and they had a conversation on Sunday night. And their question was, this week, how do you need me to emotionally support you? What are some things that I can do to help you out this week? Now, let me help you out. To people who don't plan, they have no idea. What they want you to do is to be at their beck and call when they want you in that moment now, and they're angry at you because you're not available. We need to get to a point where we're mature, where we can at least look at 5 days and see, yeah, I have a tough meeting scheduled so far on Thursday. I'm probably going to need some prayer on Wednesday night. Can we make sure we gather together and pray on Wednesday night before I take my meeting on Thursday? Hey, I got finals coming up this week. Hey, I'm starting a new semester. Hey, I'm moving out of a house. I'm buying a new home. Yeah, there's some things that are coming up. So you're starting to deal with the truths of what's going on, and you're inviting community into the process to help you out. Super huge. And yeah, it takes vulnerability. So set up plans, however you do it, and then honor those times. And staff meeting on Monday nights, we had to create some time where we talk about staff and how we train. And then we talk about what are your roles on the next Monday night. And then we talk about vision on the next Monday night. Why? Because when the staff team grew a little bit bigger and the larger, the leaders wanted to talk about everything on every night. And we never accomplished anything. And then more importantly, they didn't remember what we talked about. So they couldn't even follow through on what we decided to do. So Melissa and I years ago broke apart our meetings, and we focus them specifically on what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish. And that frustrates people. Every moment should be a smorgasbord of emotions and conversations, and it should be able to go any direction. Okay, fair, but how's it working? It's not. Point number one, train your attention. Point number two, set aside time to review your past. Set aside time to really be present. And the way you can really be present is making sure you have time set aside to review and to plan. By doing those two things, you can be present. You see, here's the thing that we run into. When we look at our past too long, we relive regrets and pains and hurts, and it damages us. And then if we spend too much time in the future, we worry and we obsess and we're fearful of all the catastrophes that could happen. The other day I was on Hulu and I was going through the things, and it was like air disasters, and it was like Yellowstone super volcano. And then the next one was like CNN, America Burns. Like, it was just like literally all these things. And I'm just like, wow, there's no hope here. But if I'm looking to Hulu for hope, really? That's getting me in some trouble. When I spend so much time on my past or I spend so much time on my future, I get distracted in the middle and I have errors. I make errors. Have you ever done that? Have you moved in a direction and not looked where you were going to go? Have you ever done that? Now, right now, it's not really happening, but there are some people who are just really not aware of 6 feet distancing in COVID. But I was at Costco and I was watching this person who was really not spatially aware, bumping into all these people, creating many panic attacks inside of Costco. And every single time I'm watching this person, they just started moving where they were going to go, and their face was looking another direction. It creates massive amounts of mistakes and hurts and errors. Let me help you out. Being present is looking where your feet are going. Paying attention, looking to what's around you and absorbing it and bringing it in. And what is mistakes? It's sin. It's errors. When I'm tired and I'm distracted and I'm spent, I make more errors and I make more mistakes. Don't you? I make a lot of them. Point number 3. Establish and make a clear goal. Establish and make a clear goal. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That is a clear goal that I have. It is a major filter that I constantly filter every choice and every decision that we make inside of my family. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Yes, but this could be pleasurable and this could be fun and this could be awesome. It's a one-time chance to invest. We're going to miss out. Then I guess we miss out. Because my God can bless me a whole lot more than that. And as for me and my house, this is what we're doing. Me personally, this is going to sound really funny. I'm a pastor. I get it. I'm set aside. My job and my full-time livelihood is being a pastor. But I want you to understand something that's important to me. I work to live. I don't live to work. Do you see the difference? I work so that I can live. I don't live so that I can go work. Some of you guys are going to bury your lives into work and you're going to destroy the most precious things around you. You're not going to be present with your spouse. You're not going to be present with your children. You're not going to build into things that are the most worthwhile, trustworthy, foundational things that will lift you up. You're going to give all your power, your emotion, your attention to a boss that if it came down to it, they would get rid of you and get somebody better than you. I hope your spouse isn't that way. They're not going to get rid of you. They love you. They're with you. They have chosen that I will walk with you through thick and thin, through difficult times, through lovely times. And there have been companies and corporations who've said, we're going to stick with you. And now they're laying everybody off. What I'm trying to say is you're going to give your life to chasing after the almighty dollar. And it is a worthless, fruitless pursuit. Go back 2 weeks ago when I taught on it. I'm trying to encourage you that right now the relationships and the people that are around you that love you are so amazing and so important. Prioritize them. Yeah, but my friends, right, will come and go. Yeah, but they're a lifelong friend. Okay, are they helping you pay off your student loans? No, they actually contributed to them. Then probably not someone that should have a high vote in your system. Establish and make your goal clear. I want to pay attention. I'm going to set aside time to review and set aside time to plan. And now I'm going to be present and just relax and be here. Establish a goal. For me, a goal since I was a small child with my parents was Sunday church was always a goal that was never messed with. Being in the house of God, with the family of God, honoring God was never messed with. Was that complicated? Yeah, sure. I had soccer games. I had other things that came up. Opportunities for me to go do stuff. Someone's birthday party that was only planned on that day and it's not going to happen at another time. I need to go do it. Let me help you out. When everything hits the fan, who do you pray to? Do you pray to the persons whose birthday party you attended for them to come help you? Do you pray to your boss? No. You pray to God. Let me help you out. How about you have a good relationship with God when you go to pray to him? You don't have to clean up tons of stuff. It's already a conversation that's going. That would be beautiful. Be present with God. Point number four, experience the moment. Take in the sights. Take in the smells. Take in the feelings and the thoughts. Good, bad, ugly, gross, stinky, sweet. Literally honor the truth of what is really going on. Right now, it is the best of times and it is the worst of times. But you know what I've learned? That was true in the 90s. That was true in the 80s. That was true in the 70s. That was true in the 60s. That was true in the 50s. And I'm just talking about the 1700s. Yes. It is amazing that we have the internet right now. The internet has so absolutely blessed us, and the internet has so absolutely destroyed us. It's the best of times. It's the worst of times. Experience the moment. Point number one, train your attention. Point number two, set aside time. Point number three, establish and make a clear goal. Point number four, experience the moment. Be there. Be honest about it. Stop speaking in code or speaking differently. Stop saying, hey, what are you doing Thursday? Send a text message that says, I would really love to spend time with you. It's been a while. Can I please hang out with you? Stop saying stuff like, hey. What we're doing is we're doing self-protection. I don't want to be vulnerable and tell you what I really want. I want you to guess it. Let me help you out. We're all brain dead. Nobody's guessing right. Stop it. Stop it. Help your spouse out. Hey, I need to sleep for 7 days. Can you help me with that process? All right, we'll figure out some plan. I know people are going to invite us to do some stuff, but clearly sleep needs to be put at the top of the priority, and we need to say no to things. Let's get some sleep. Okay? Discern how to respond is the fifth one. So how do we avoid this overload? How can we be present? We have to train our attention. We have to set aside time. We have to establish clear goals and actually try to do them and be flexible with what God is doing. We have to be present in that moment because we've done the work talking about what our plans are and we've looked at the review of what's going on. We can experience the moment and we can stop and smell the roses. And then we can discern how to respond in each and every moment when we're present. Isn't that important right now? How do I respond in this moment? The problem is when we're so tired and we're so exhausted, we go immediately to negativity, sarcasm, criticism, attack, and anger because it's the easiest and most basic emotional response that we have in our system. We do not go to love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. We don't go there. When we do go there, it's called a miracle. It's an act of the Spirit. So how do we discern how to respond? Ask God, God, what are you doing? Immediately, I want this to end. My flesh says, stop it. And God says, I'm growing you. I'm maturing you. I am developing you. I am training you. I am molding you. I am chipping you away. I am taking stuff off. I am pruning so that you will grow anew and you are praying against my will. Yes, Lord. Yes, I'm praying against your will. Stop it. It hurts. Find out what God is doing. And when you find out what God is doing, work to move to bless what he's doing. I get it. Your flesh doesn't think what he's doing is good. Tell your flesh to shut up. And tell your flesh to bow down and worship the king. How do you discern how to respond? Use your training. Look at the past of how God has blessed you, what he's taught you to do, and how he's taught you to go through. You can use your past. You can use your brain to realize, oh, I remember a time where God did this, like, you know, when I was in my 20s or when I was in my 30s. Seems like every 10 years, God does this to me. You can pay attention and you can respond in that process by looking at what the Lord has done. Look back at his great things that he's accomplished. Use your past experiences to look for God and to look to God. All right, everybody here, I'm going to say it again. Everybody pay attention, okay? Use your past experiences to look for God and to look to God. You can use them. Use them for good, not for evil. All right, here's our application. You guys have done great. You've done great. I'm gonna go back. I'm going to say them again. Here are the five ways to be present. Train your attention. The wise men studied the stars. They paid attention to what was going on in the heavenlies. They spent massive amounts of time figuring out what to do. They set aside time. They left what they were doing in Babylon. They traveled 500 miles, which was about 2 months. They were gone from their families for about 4 or 5 months in this process. They set aside time to do what they needed to do. They established a clear goal. They brought gifts that they were going to give to the king. Notice they didn't bring the gifts out for Herod. They established that they had gifts that they were going to give. They had a clear goal. We will go see the child and we will give him these gifts. They discerned how to respond. They ran into Herod and they saw a liar and they had to process, how do we handle this guy? We can tell he's not somebody of integrity. We've noticed how everybody's responded in fear around him. This dude's not safe. And when they showed up and they were at the house of Jesus, they came in and they saw him and they discerned to give their gifts and bow down and worship. How beautiful it is. So what's our application? It's hilarious. I'm teaching the application and I'm talking about being present and my dogs are howling inside of the house. So distracting. Let me help you guys out. Move the distractions out of the way. Focus, laser focus. Shut off the distractions. You're the wise men. You've come into Bethlehem. And yes, it might be cold. It might be night. There might be a party over at another place. Focus on what you're supposed to do. Go to where you're supposed to go. Touch the white fence and bow down and worship your king. Here's your application. Decide what you will do with the time you have. You and I must decide here and now, December 13th, 2020, what will I do with the time that I have now? How will I live the rest of my life? What legacy will I leave? How will I be known for how I handle these things? At the end of my life, at the end of my days, when people gather together to talk about Nathan Brown, what will they say? Man, he loved video games. Loved them. What will they say about you? Will they say, wow, they loved God with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength, and they served the king with everything they had. And they love video games. And they loved YouTube. How about not making those the number one? Go back to the Gandalf quote. I wish it need not have happened in my time. Don't you wish we weren't dealing with what we're dealing with? Whether cancer or sickness or online learning or teaching or being stuck in your home or not being stuck in your home, having COVID, not having COVID, getting sick, getting a cough, dealing with whatever. Don't you wish you weren't dealing with what you were dealing with? Yes. And so do all who live in such times. But that is not for them to decide. We all have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. God, what do you want me to do with the time that you've given to me? God, what do you want me to do with the resources that you've given me? God, what do you want me to do with the gifts that you've given me? God, what do you want me to do with my house? What do you want me to do with my home? What do you want me to do with my marriage? What do you want me to do with my kids? What do you want me to do with my car? What do you want me to do with this building? How, God, do you want to be loved? There's one more quote I'd like to read. It's at the end of the Two Towers, and there's a conversation between Frodo and Sam. Frodo says, I can't do this, Sam. And Sam says, I know. It's all wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here, but we are. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't know, you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad happened? But in the end, It's only a passing thing, this shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. This is where you say amen. Those were the stories that stayed with you, that meant something, even if you were too small to understand why, but I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. Because they were holding on to something. And Frodo asks, what were they holding on to, Sam? And Sam responds, that there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. I want to encourage you that yes, in some ways, there's some dark times. It's the best of times and it's the worst of times. Yes, you want to quit. Yes, you want to give up. Yes, you want to hibernate. Yes, you want to ignore. Or some of you, you just want to grab a sword and go hit everything and burn it. Like, I get it. I get it. But those of us who follow the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and those of us who are followers of the King will be obedient to our orders and we will respond the way he wants us to respond. If he says stand, we stand. If he says stay, we stay. If he says come, we go. If he says leave, we leave. If he says stay, we stay. Whatever. He's in charge, not me. There's something good in this world. Behold, a child has been born to take away all the sins of the earth. There's something good. He will bring love, joy, and peace. And he already has. It's here. His presence will change everything. And when his presence resides in you, his presence through you will change everything. May you be present in this time. May your life be lived as a gift. May you share your life with those around you to the glory of the King. Amen. God bless you guys. Enjoy being present this week. And enjoy being present with the King because he's here. Have a great Sunday.